the numbers he'd entered on his laptop. It had been a slow day, in a slow week, in a slow fall. He felt old. He had a birthday coming up in November, one he didn't feel at all like celebrating. He'd recently added cholesterol and blood pressure medications to his daily dose of multivitamins. He'd begun wearing glasses for reading. He couldn't remember the last time he'd gotten out of bed in the morning without feeling pain somewhere. He played basketball regularly at the Y with the old martyrs, a bunch of guys who had gray hair or no hair at all anymore. When each spring came in full, he biked a good deal, on road and off. He could still paddle for a week in the boundary waters and portage a 50-pound pack and canoe across several hundred rods. But the prospect of an upcoming birthday, of yet another step toward the inevitable decline of everything, weighed on him heavily and caused him, as he sat alone in Sam's place, to consider the future darkly and ruminate with many regrets on the past. He thought of himself as a man of few words, well-chosen and unrevealing. He didn't want people worrying about him. So he hadn't shared with anyone, not his wife Rainey or his children or his friends, the depth of his dark considerations. It was his struggle alone, and he would get through it. He sat in a circle of harsh light from the overhead bulb. A stiff autumn wind blew outside, and occasionally a branch from one of the pines that grew next to the old Quonset hut scraped against the metal siding, a sound like the scratch of some wild creature trying to claw its way in. Otherwise, the place was deathly quiet. So when Cork's cell phone rang, that shattering of the stillness startled him. He fumbled the phone from his pocket and saw on the display that it was his son. Stephen currently lived in St. Paul with his wife, Belle, and was in his second year of law school. He'd secured an internship working for the Great North Innocence Project, an organization whose aim was to analyze old cases to determine if new evidence might overturn a wrongful conviction. Stephen was passionate about this work, and Cork was proud of him. But he missed his son, and maybe that was a part of the darkness he felt. "Hey, kiddo, what's up?" Cork said. "Still at Sam's place?" Stephen asked. "Just closed up. In the counting house now, counting out my money." "And the queen is in her parlor?"
"Rainey's at home. Only me here."
"Drinking a Liney's, I'll bet."
"Good call, counselor."
"Not a counselor yet, Dad."
"All in good time."
"So," Stephen said, then paused. Cork sensed in that momentary silence at the other end of the line the seriousness of what Stephen was about to say. He set the bottle of Leinenkugel beer on the table. "Do you remember a case you handled a long time ago?" "Axel Boshe?" Stephen finally asked.
"Of course," Cork said. "Impossible to forget. The first major crime I investigated after being elected sheriff. A particularly brutal murder. Why do you ask?"
There was another pause, another plunge into an unsettling silence. Then Stephen drove home the painful point of his call, the nightmare of every man or woman who'd ever worn the badge of a sheriff and had taken to heart the solemn pledge to protect and to serve. "Dad, I'm pretty sure you sent an innocent man to prison."
Part 1. 25 years ago. Chapter 1.
In those days, the Tamarack County Sheriff's Department was located on the